The Better Health Radio Show. And on deck this evening, we've got Dr. Dana Grandison. She'll be your host for this evening. And she will invite her guests to speak with her and therefore speak to you. So let me take up no more of her time and say a very good evening to Dr. Grandison. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Gregson. And good evening to the wider Barbadian audience who's joining us this evening for another edition of Our Better Health Radio Show. I wanted to take this opportunity, first of all, to thank all of our advocates who, over this past week, specifically on the 21st of March, who would have joined in the effort to bring awareness to World Down Syndrome Day, and certainly to bring awareness to this condition. And so this evening, we are having Dr. Jillian Birchwood to come and speak to us about this condition, really explaining very clearly this pathology, and certainly to enlighten us and really clarify some of those misconceptions that we may have about this condition. So I'll go ahead at this point in time and introduce Dr. Birchwood. Dr. Birchwood is a pediatrician and neonatologist. She did her pediatric residency at the Brooklyn Hospital Center, affiliated with Cornell University in New York. She then completed a neonatal fellowship at the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey and returned to Barbados, where she is the director of the neonatal unit at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, which is a 24-bed level 3 NICU unit. And Dr. Birchwood can explain that to us in a bit. She's also an associate professor in child health at the University of the West Indies, involved in training both medical students and pediatric residents, as well as supervising research projects. Dr. Birchwood has worked widely in the Caribbean region, promoting and supporting newborn care. She has developed country guidelines for aspects of newborn care, both nationally and regionally in the Caribbean. And since 2014, she has also been a regional neonatal advisor for perinatal outcomes in the Caribbean with the Pan American Health Organization, PAHO. So I want to take this opportunity to also let our listeners know that Dr. Birchwood was also one of my lecturers, and she has been some person who has actually shaped me in my medical career. And I want to say good evening and welcome, Dr. Birchwood. How are you doing?
Good evening, Adana, Dr. Grandison, and good evening to all of Barbados. Now you're putting some good age on my bones.
No. You started early. We'll leave it at that.
When I was 10 years old. Yeah.
Yes.
It's a pleasure for me to be here with you this evening.
Good. Thank you so much, Dr. Birchwood. Dr. Birchwood, when I approached you a few weeks ago, I told you, Dr. Birchwood, this is a topic that I really thought that we needed to share some information with the public. And I wanted to start off right out the gates with asking, what is Down syndrome, or as we speak about it in the medical profession, trisomy 21? So can you please explain that to our listeners?
Yes. So I'm really happy to talk about this topic today as we celebrated or acknowledged Down syndrome day, where we would have rocked our socks this Tuesday gone. And I was so happy to see so many people rocking their socks in support of children and adults with Down syndrome. So one of the biggest questions that people may have is exactly what is Down syndrome? And so I'm happy to explain that. So Down syndrome is a genetic condition. It's quite common. It's the most common genetic condition that we would see. And everyone has at some point in time seen someone with Down syndrome. So we are all familiar with people with Down syndrome. But saying that it is a genetic condition essentially means that it is a condition that from the time that a child is conceived and there is a combination of genetic information from both parents, then this would have created a child with Down syndrome. So let me break it down a little bit. So all of us have genetic information inside of us contained in chromosomes. And I always like to tell people chromosomes are like a recipe book. It tells the growing and developing egg and that has formed when the parents have created this new life. It tells the growing and developing egg exactly how to grow and develop, gives instructions which helps that egg to grow and make a unique person. So within each cell of our body, we have 23 pairs of this genetic information or in chromosomes, and that's 46 chromosomes in all. And you would know, Dr. Grandison, that when we have a child who has Down syndrome, the one difference is one extra chromosome at the 21st pair. So instead of having 46 chromosomes, that child has 47 in each cell. And because that contains the genetic recipe book, that child will grow and develop with a different set of instructions compared to if you had just 46. And so this is the origin, this is the underlying reason why a child will be born with Down syndrome. It's nobody's fault. It is a genetic condition. So I hope that helps to clear it up for some people.
Great. Thank you. And I like the theme this year, because the theme for World Down Syndrome this year was with us, not for us. And that's a really powerful theme when you think about it, because quite often persons with Down syndrome sometimes are ostracized, they're stigmatized. Yes. And yes, having Down syndrome does not automatically mean you are absolutely disabled. You cannot help yourself. You cannot provide for yourself. You can't think. And so this presentation this evening, I think that's really one of the things I would really like to educate our public about, in terms of how we really start to think about Down syndrome. But before I even go there, can you explain what are some of the symptoms or presentations? How can one know that someone may have Down syndrome, or what can parents or future parents look out for if they're, for instance, planning a family?
Yes, so that's a great question. So we understand that Down syndrome has a genetic basis because of that one extra chromosome. So there are 47 chromosomes, and that one instead of 46, and that one extra piece of genetic information means that there's so many different changes that can happen in the child who's growing and developing in the womb when they have Down syndrome. So it can affect every part of the body. Some things you can see when a child is born, and some things you can only tell after when you do certain investigations. Some things are very obvious. But when a child is born, you can see immediately that they would have certain features which might set them apart from a child who does not have Down syndrome and would make you strongly suspicious that they may have Down syndrome. So I can describe some of the features that you would see. And then, as I said, there are some that you simply cannot see and you must do investigations. So they overall have their shorter stature. So the babies will tend to be a little bit shorter than a child who does not have Down syndrome. In addition to that, they have slanting of the eyes. So when your eyes are shut, for most people, and this does not apply to people of Far East Asian descent, where they will naturally have slanted eyes when they shut their eyes. So if you shut your eyes, you would have a fairly straight line from one end of your eye, from the middle near the nose, to the end that's closer to the ears. In children who have Down syndrome, that line, as we know, is slanted a bit upwards. So that's the first thing that you may notice. In addition to that, the central part of their face is quite small. They may have a relatively large tongue because their mouth is quite small as well. Their ears may be differently positioned, and the back of their head may be quite flattened. So you may also see little things like on the palm of their hand, there may be a single transverse line. Many people have lots of lines on their hands, but with children with Down syndrome, they have one single crease that we call the simian crease. And in addition to that, between the first and the second toe, we might have a much larger gap that's called the sandal gap. But there are lots of things in addition that you can see. But those are some of the most common things. Would you like me to describe the things that we can't see as well?
Absolutely, because I think that sometimes we are not sure of what possible complications we may need to look out for. Yes. If you are the caregiver or family member of someone with Down syndrome. So I think it's really important that we also get to understand some of these other presentations.
Yes. So they don't just look different in their own special little way. On the inside, they may have differences. So one important thing to know is that the majority of children who have Down syndrome also have some degree of intellectual and or developmental disability. And I want to emphasize at this point that does not mean inability. It is a difference in their development, but boy, are they capable of developing. And I think it's really important for families to know your child is capable of so much when they're born with Down syndrome. And for people who perhaps may not have a family member who has it and who may not know, please don't assume that these children don't have a wonderful future ahead of them. So they may develop at a different pace. They may have some degree of intellectual disability, but that is not to be confused with inability, because then that restricts the things that they can do, because then we box them in where they shouldn't be. So in addition to intellectual or developmental disability, which can be of varying degrees, you may have mild, you may have moderate, and in some cases, but definitely, but I would say that is a minority of children who have Down syndrome. About half of all children with Down syndrome have a heart condition which may require surgery. And so whenever a child is born with Down syndrome, we go looking for things that we know we might need to address and plan for. So a child who's born with Down syndrome will undergo a period of assessment, including having their heart checked, to see if there is a heart condition that might show up later. So about half of children with Down syndrome have a heart condition. The other thing they may have is a gastrointestinal blockage or a stomach blockage in different parts of their body. For example, in the duodenum, which is right after the stomach, or they may have something called Hirschsprung disease, which can also cause an intestinal blockage in the early stages. They may also have kidney problems, which we need to look for. They may have eye problems, and so the eye specialist would be involved quite early if we have a child with Down syndrome. They may have hearing problems. They may have dentition problems. It doesn't mean that they will, but these are some of the things that we will be looking for to anticipate how do we need to help this child grow and develop to their full potential. And we'll be looking for these things very early on so that we can step in and be proactive.
Thank you, Dr. Birchwood. I want to take this opportunity to remind our listeners, because I know because this topic is something that's so exciting to me, I would not have given out the phone numbers for this evening, although the majority of our listeners happen to know our phone numbers. So I just want to remind our listeners that if they have any questions, they want to ask Dr. Birchwood any questions, you can call 434-1790. And Gregson would very nicely assist you in getting to talk to Dr. Birchwood. Or if you don't feel so comfortable to talk on the air, please do not hesitate to send your questions to 266-4862 via WhatsApp. Again, that is 266-4862. So Dr. Birchwood, can you tell us, is there anything that a parent or a potential couple can do to prevent Down syndrome? Because quite often persons may come together, plan a family, have a child, and they come to find out, okay, this child has Down syndrome, and the blame game starts. Mm-hmm. Can you enlighten us about, is it mommy's fault? Is it daddy's mm-hmm. fault? Is it really anybody's fault? Mm-hmm. Can you really clarify some of that misconception that quite often we tend to see in the community?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's such an important aspect, you know, so that when someone finds out that they have a child with Down syndrome, or they're about to have a child with Down syndrome, then yes, the blame game can sometimes start. You know, it doesn't run in my family. That doesn't happen on my side. But the truth is, Down syndrome can happen to anyone, anywhere. Now, because it is a genetic condition, and we know at the time of conception that we get some genetic material from dad and some genetic material from mom to make those 23 pairs of chromosomes, nobody has any control over that extra chromosome slipping in there. And it happens from the time of conception. It isn't because you drank too much of this, you didn't drink too much enough of that, you hung your foot outside on a moonlight night, all these strange things that sometimes people will believe. We know it is a random event in the vast majority of cases. In a very tiny percentage, there may be a genetic predisposition for one parent to keep passing the extra chromosome along. But that is by far a very uncommon way of getting Down syndrome. The vast majority of the time, it is random, it is by chance, and it can happen to anyone. Now, having said that, we know that mothers over the age of 35 have a higher risk for having Down syndrome. But because the majority of mothers deliver under the age of 35, they're the ones who have most children with Down syndrome. So a mother over the age of 35 is at higher risk. It doesn't mean that she will have a baby with Down syndrome, but she's not the most likely candidate for having a child. It's usually women under the age of 35. So most children with Down syndrome are born to younger mothers. Yes.
Okay, Dr. Birchwood, I'm going to pause right here because I think we have our first caller for the evening. Gregson, I'm going to turn over to you.
Yes, please. Good evening, sir. Go right ahead, please.
Yes, good evening. Thank you very much. Now, I have two questions about this wonderful topic this evening, and I'm almost as excited as you, Dr. Grandison, so glad that we could discuss this evening. My first question would be, thank you very much. My first question would be, the great doctor, would have described some of the disadvantages of these particular types of these people. Are there any advantages to having Down syndrome? Are there any physical or mental advantages, such as, I'm not sure if because they're shorter in stature that they're more easily able to be good at stuff like the sack races or whatever like that. And I have a second question after this one, please. Thank you.
So I'm going to pause, let you pause so that Dr. Birchwood can answer this first question. Dr. Birchwood, go ahead.
Yes, so you raised an excellent question. So we would have talked about some of the disadvantages, but families who are raising children with Down syndrome will tell you how wonderful the experience is. It's different, perhaps, from raising a child who does not have Down syndrome, but Down syndrome children are known for being extremely loving, and they are really great at knitting families together. And everyone who has met or has interacted with children who have Down syndrome just fall in love. So much so that when we are talking to families and we say to them, you know, we are now explaining that they may have a child who has Down syndrome, I am very happy to truthfully tell them, yes, there may be challenges, but you have so much to look forward to. These are children who are very much the heart and soul of their family. And they are loved and they are cherished because of the lovely way in which they, you know, their personalities are, and they are well known for that. So they are very loved.
Yes, thank you. And so loving. Much. Yes, brilliant. I'm happy for that advantage, and I thank you about that. And that is actually the exact particular behavior that I got when I met my first person that I ever knew with it. My second and final question, Dr. Grandison. Now, would a Down syndrome person, what would be the best job? What would be the greatest occupation? What would predispose them? What would they be best susceptible to in terms of an occupation or a job that they can fulfill in terms of their life course? As a part of the life cycle. Thank you.
Dr. Birchwood, I'm going to put you over to there, but I think just as probably everyone on this planet is different and has their strengths and weaknesses, I believe probably it would be best suited on an individual basis. But Dr. Birchwood, maybe you can lend some clarity on this here, given you're the expert in this area.
Well, I think that you answered that perfectly, Dr. Grandison. Each of us here on planet Earth have individual strengths and weaknesses and things that we're good at and things that we're not so good at. And I think it's really important not to put people who have Down syndrome in a box and say that they should do this and they should do that, because you really may be limiting what they are capable of. And you look around the world, including here in Barbados, at the things that children with Down syndrome do when they grow up, it never fails to amaze me what they are capable of. And so you have to know the individual child. And as they grow, you keep encouraging them and not assuming they can't do something. Just because you take a little longer to do something does not mean you won't be able to do it. And so I've seen them in so many different fields, in art, in customer service, even in the sciences. And again, they may have intellectual differences, but those may be mild, moderate, or severe. So that no two children with Down syndrome are the same, and therefore no two children are capable of only exactly the same thing. So there's such a wide scope for what they are capable of. It only requires our encouragement and love and belief that they can do anything that they would want to set their mind to, and not to think that they are necessarily limited. It's amazing what they can do. I've seen them as actors in movies and, you know, so many different roles. That it's amazing. I wonder what they can't do. That's what I wonder.
All right, Dr. Birchwood, a comment here for you, and then a query. I'll give you the comment first. I think it should do that. This one says, good evening, Dr. Grandison and Dr. Birchwood. Thank you all for this topic. I know the listeners, just as I am too, are learning more than they knew about it. Two things I will say is that, in my opinion, persons with Down syndrome are more loving. They have more love in their hearts than some of the average persons. And also, in my opinion, persons with Down syndrome have a higher intellectual capacity than normal. That's the comment. Now, let me see if I can find the query the other person had for you. Just give me 1 second here. Do I have it? Yep. Well, I had it there for a second, then it disappeared. So let's try one more time. Here we go. Okay. Good evening. Can a test be done on the unborn child to tell if the unborn has it? That's the query.
Yes. You want me to go ahead, Dr. Grandison?
Absolutely. And I also have a question that was sent to me via WhatsApp as well, so I'll give you that shortly thereafter. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the listeners certainly know their stuff and are asking all the right questions. So, yes, it can be detected before a child is born in different ways. So there are screening tests where you would look to see if there's a risk of Down syndrome. For example, a blood test can be done on the mom during the pregnancy. This is something that can be done by the obstetrician or ordered by the obstetrician that will let you know if the mom, during the pregnancy, some of the baby's cells or body cells can get into the mom's system, and they can test some of those cells that are present to see if there's a high risk for mom to have it. Also routinely done in many pregnancies is something that is called an anomaly scan, where they look at the growing baby, usually around 18 to 20 weeks of pregnancy, and they're able to see certain key features which the obstetrician might think that it's possible that this baby has Down syndrome. So those are screening tests. Now, if those screening tests are suspicious, then they may go on to do more confirmatory testing. And that can be done in several ways. One is that some of the fluid that is around baby in the womb, called the amniotic fluid, can be tested, and you can make a diagnosis that way. A tiny piece of the placenta can be sampled, and that's called chorionic villus sampling, and that can confirm if a child has Down syndrome. And you can actually take blood from the umbilical cord itself during the pregnancy. An obstetrician can do that. It's a special procedure done under ultrasound guidance. They can actually take blood that would be baby's blood without sticking baby in the womb and send that for confirmatory testing. So certainly we have had situations where people have received that diagnosis before the baby is born. And of course, the diagnosis can also be confirmed after the baby is born with genetic testing, but this time taking the blood from baby. And that is in situations where we weren't sure beforehand and we needed to confirm genetically afterwards. So certainly it can be diagnosed beforehand. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to slip in my question here, Gregson, if you have any more. I'm going to slip in mine. Following on from that question, should all mothers over 35 have a test to see if the baby has Down syndrome or maybe over 40 years? So if I know, especially predominantly in the professional arena, a lot of women who are professionals opt to have their families at a later age. Should all mothers who are over the age of 35 and considered advanced maternal age, should they undergo this type of testing?
So that is a question which is quite under debate. So ideally, every single pregnant woman should have screening and testing. For example, that anomaly scan that we talked about, that special ultrasound at 18 to 20 weeks. In an ideal world where money was not an object, every single mother should have that assessment done. And not just to look for Down syndrome, as you would be aware, Dr. Grandison, but look for any other abnormalities, which is what we never hope to see, but we know it's a possibility, so that we can adequately prepare a family. Now, women over 35 are, as we know, at especially high risk of having a child with Down syndrome. But remember, most moms who have Down syndrome babies are going to be in the younger age group because they are more likely in that age group to be having children. So it is a kind of a tricky question. All women should have screening, but I think that women over 35 should be more proactive about ensuring that where feasible, that they do have that screening because it is available in Barbados. But, you know, in some cases, there may be a cost attached to it, which I think is a factor which can be a challenge sometimes. Yes.
All right. I've got one here that I believe we can have pay some close attention to. Let's see if I can decipher what they're trying to say. I think they're asking a question and making comments as well. It says, good evening, doctors. Well, they say ladies, but good evening, doctors. Why over the years, I was hearing sometimes that when a delivery happens at a house, that's my edit, or a doctor used forceps or caused the baby delay in passing through the vaginal canal, and then they stopped. Then they said, I know a very intelligent male child who was very bright and carries a good conversation with family members. How did people get that notion? I'm assuming that they're trying to say that when those conditions prevailed, that it led to Down syndrome. I'm not sure if you're following what I'm saying, but I believe that's what the person was trying to comment and say. All right. And then they go on, to say,
yes.
When they say, how did they get that notion? But then I know one male child who really could not do anything for himself. Couldn't talk, couldn't walk. And again, I know one of those mothers who was 40 years old, and that baby is quite normal and now is a father of two so far. He's the only child of the mother, and he did some special stuff in the London Choir. But anyhow, I get the point that they're trying to make. I hope you understood what they were trying to say.
And Dr. Bertrand, I think what that person is probably highlighting, and maybe they can lend some clarity as they probably WhatsApp you back in, Gregson. But there's so many misconceptions surrounding how one can end up having a child with Down syndrome. If the child is born at home, if it was a full moon, you know, if it was that you drank such and such, you know, if it is that you sat down a hot step. So many strange concepts that have absolutely nothing to do with this process. So we have covered it already, but Dr. Bertrand, just wanted to really ask you to go over the fact that this condition is a genetic condition that happens randomly.
Yes. So as you well said, Dr. Grandison, there are many misconceptions about how children develop Down syndrome, but it is in that child's fate from the moment of conception. So children will normally get 23 pieces of genetic material or chromosomes from mom, 23 pieces from dad of genetic material in the chromosomes. Those combine, and we have 23 pairs or 46 sets. So in children with Down syndrome, they get a 47th. In the vast majority of cases, this is a random event. And therefore, there's nothing that a parent has done wrong. It has nothing to do with the time of birth. It has everything to do with a genetic coincidence, which can happen to anyone, anywhere in the world. And it's not their fault. It's not something they did wrong, or the doctor did wrong, or anything along those lines. It is a coincidence. Just like when you roll the dice, you get a 6 one time, you may get a 2 the next time. There's no rhyme or reason. And that is exactly what happens when you have Down syndrome in the vast majority of cases.
Well, I guess
I hope that clarifies things.
Well, I guess that might be the answer for the next query. They're asking about a twin, one being normal and the other being saddled with Down syndrome. Is that possible?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And we have certainly seen twins, and I know of several, where one child has Down syndrome and the other does not have Down syndrome. And that's what happened in the situation where you have non-identical twins, because of course, identical twins have the same genetic material. And so if you have one twin who has Down syndrome and the other one does not, they are two individuals who share the womb, but they are individuals with their own individual genetic material. So you certainly can have that happen in the same way you can have a twin where one is a boy and one is a girl. They each have their own individual genetic material. They're not the same. They share a womb. So I've certainly seen that happen in several cases. And yes, that definitely can happen.
Okay. Dr. Birchwood, it has nothing to do with one of the fetuses getting more food intrauterine than the others. No, I know, because these are the type of questions that sometimes we do get. You know, you would hear, oh, this baby wasn't getting as much blood to the brain, so this is what happened. All it is truly just, truly just genetic, correct?
Absolutely. As you know, Dr. Grandison, and I know you know, it's definitely a genetic coincidence. It is not that something went wrong during the pregnancy, which is a common misconception.
Great. Yes. Gregson?
Yes, you go ahead, please.
Great. So, Dr. Birchwood, you spoke about some of the complications that persons suffering from Down syndrome can have. And certainly one of the key complications, especially within the Barbadian context, for me would be obesity. Now, in Barbados, we have 1 in 3 of our children suffering from obesity between the ages of 13 and 15. Are persons with Down syndrome at greater risk of developing obesity in comparison to the general population?
Yes. Yes, they are at higher risk. And it's a little paradoxical, because in the very beginning, they have sometimes feeding challenges, which can be quite significant. So in the newborn period, we sometimes struggle to get little ones to be able to feed effectively. And yet as they get older and their ability to feed improves, then we run into the opposite problem, which is obesity, which can follow them into later life. So we have to take particular care when we are monitoring not only the development of a child with Down syndrome, but certainly their growth. And when they are going to their doctor, to the polyclinic for their regular checkups, that's one of the areas that is going to be focused on to ensure that we don't have a child who develops obesity. It's one of those things we can pick up in the early and nip in the bud, but that is definitely a risk, and will confer with it all the risks that obesity can confer later in life. So obese children become obese adolescents, become obese adults. And so we want to avoid them becoming obese. We don't want them to have those complications, diabetes, and all of those other chronic non-communicable diseases which are associated with obesity. Unfortunately, they are not spared from that if they do develop obesity. So parents have to take particular care and work along with their child's healthcare provider in order to avoid that as a potential outcome.
And Dr. Birchwood, you made a very good point when you stated that children who may have Down syndrome, in as much as they may have intellectual disability and in some cases physical disability and developmental delay, it doesn't mean that they cannot and they should not be limited. And so it brings me to the next complication, shedding some light on the next complication, because as you just stated, children with Down syndrome don't remain children forever. And yes, persons with Down syndrome are at increased risk of dementia.
Yes.
And so how, what information do you have for family members? Not so much just talking about the dementia, but really ensuring that your child or your loved one or your family friend has the best possible opportunity, some really hands-on practical ways that you can empower that child to develop and to be as competent, independently competent within society as possible. Because we know historically, persons with Down syndrome died at very young ages. However, with the advances in medical technology, that has changed. So what are some of the practical pointers that you can give to family members so that they can better cope with someone who suffers from Down syndrome?
Yes. So I think one of the first things that a family can do is to get rid of their own preconceived misconceptions about what it means. Because from the time a family has preconceived misconceptions, then they're going to limit that child. So the first thing you want to do is get rid of those misconceptions. The second thing you want to do is to educate yourself and position your child to receive the best possible education. So if a child is diagnosed with Down syndrome after birth, then what happens after that is they have the initial assessment to see what kind of medical concerns that they may have. And then there will be a path charted for that child during the first year, the first few years of what we need to look for. So we want to make sure that that child goes to developmentally supportive care. And we know that in the community, if we have a child with Down syndrome, they will automatically be referred to the A.C. Graham Children's Developmental Center. So they can start working with that child from early, because we know that there is a risk of developmental delay and intellectual disability. So we want to start them there. You may meet other families of children. There's also a support group in Barbados. And so you want to reach out to other parents, because, you know, there's a little network of parents of children who have Down syndrome. And I think that's immensely helpful for families to reach out to someone who has walked that way before. I might sit there as a doctor, you might sit there as a doctor and explain things to them. But when you have a family who's walking that walk, it's going to be so helpful. They can reach back to you and say, I know how you feel. Don't despair. Listen, this is what you need to do. The other thing is that the Ministry of Education can be involved from early. Assessments will need to be done to see where that child's strengths and weaknesses are, so that we can work on placement for education. Yes, education. A long time ago, these children were kept at home. What a waste. They are children who can grow and develop. So we don't want them sitting at home. They're out to get an education just like everybody else. And so, for example, they were talking about one of the of a twin who has Down syndrome I know of. They're both at the same school. One twin is in mainstream school, so to speak. The other is in a special annex at that school, also getting an education, and may I say, growing and developing really wonderfully. And so knowing that your child can get an education, knowing that there are support services out there, you need to work along with your healthcare provider so that they can guide you as to what steps to take, because you're going to feel really confused. And then also the liaison with the Ministry of Education, which happens at multiple points. Not all children may be able to be suitable for that school environment, but even so, they're capable of development. And so there will be a place for them so they can develop as well. Very important.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Birchwood. Dr. Birchwood, when I was reading your bio sketch, it spoke about the ability that you oversee a unit, a tier three unit. Can you explain, yes, because I really want to be able to also speak about what is the level of care that can be offered to the newborn at that facility? So start off by explaining to us what really is a tier three level facility. Gregson, you have someone?
Before I'm very sorry to interrupt you and the good doctor, okay, but the scholar's on a cell phone
Okay.
So before the good doctor answers your query, let's see if we can get him in here. Good evening.
Yes, sir.
Yes, please. Go right ahead.
Good evening to the doctor. I always forget your name when you're first on, and to Dr. Grandison and to Mr.
Dr. Birchwood is the name.
Now, I don't know. Somehow it seems like I am always being picked out, but you start on education a short while I was listening, and I spent some years dealing with what was considered the trainable level, those who have IQs of 50 and below, grouped into one class called the trainables class. Now, one of the things that I specifically looked at was speech development, because you find that those with the Down syndromes, their tongues are sometimes heavier than usual for them to take command, and then they end up with delayed speech problems. Mm-hmm. And so you have to encourage them to exercise the mandible and the maxilla, that is the bone at the top and the one at the bottom that contains the teeth, so that they can use them accurately to express the sounds we call speech.
Yes.
Now, what I found was that at the later stage, that was after 6 or 7 years old, I was able to use a keyboard to get them to speak clearly that people can understand what they were saying. And that was very, very important for them. And it was also very motivating. However, one thing that I would like to ask a question on that may end up to be an answer, that people are talking about deficits that people could derive, not necessarily anything to do with trisomy 21. And I wanted to ask if, in particular, that trisomy 21 has any special feature for phenylalanine, which is the amino acid that forms phenylalanine acid and kind of inhibits the brain metabolism, or what I would say poison the metabolism, and if that has a great deal to do with the Down syndrome.
Thank you, caller. Go ahead, Doc.
Yes. Have any questions? Well, you have any response?
Well, I want to thank him for his obvious years of service in working with educating children who have Down syndrome. And he referenced the word trisomy 21, which is the same thing as Down syndrome. Trisomy refers to that third chromosome where there would be two. So that's just another word for Down syndrome. So no, I'm not aware of any connection with phenylalanine, which he would have referenced. So I do thank him for his question. I know that sometimes there are a lot of different connections, but no, I'm not aware of such a connection.
All right.
As he was asking the question, because off the top, I'm not aware of it either. Mm-hmm. But this is the era of research, and yes. So doctors, we are constantly researching. And I'm seeing here a paper that's cited from back in 1979 that states that suggesting that an impairment in phenylalanine and tyrosine turnover in Mongolism. There's a possibility that it can be associated, but not directly coming out and speaking to the link between being a hard link. You know, sometimes we have an association and then there's a causal link between the two. And I'm not seeing here, just by a very superficial search, from what I'm seeing, I'm not seeing that there's any causal link for this here.
All right, Dr. Grandison.
Yes, I think.
I beg your pardon.
To add
go ahead,
one
Bertram.
Little go ahead, thing please. To that is just that when you have phenylketonuria, where you have an abnormality in the metabolism of the amino acid the abnormal metabolism of phenylalanine, that there's an association with intellectual disability. So I think that that is where that question would have come from. But as a firm connection, no.
Okay, Dr. Grandison, before you engage Dr. Birchwood again with your former question, let me just slip this one in here. And I think Dr. Birchwood just mentioned again about the count of the chromosomes. They're asking, seeing that Down syndrome comes about as a result of an extra chromosome, what if there's one less chromosome? And do persons also have one less chromosome? In other words, I think you said if there's 47, so what if there's 45? I think that's what they're asking.
Well, I will go ahead and answer that. So there is a condition where you can have one less chromosome. In fact, there are all sorts of permutations and combinations with chromosomes. Down syndrome is just the most common that we would know about, but there are loads of permutations and combinations. And there is one example. There is a condition called Turner syndrome, where you have one less chromosome and it's 45 chromosomes. And children who have Turner syndrome, they're girls, and they can certainly have changes related to the one less chromosome. They can have a heart condition. They also have a shorter stature. They can have certain complications, although they do not have intellectual disability. So that's a great question, and there are concerns related to that as well.
Dr. Birchwood, the questions are coming in hot and heavy this evening. I see Gregson letting me know that we have another caller, and I have another question that just came in on my personal WhatsApp because persons are listening out and they have their questions. So, Gregson, I'm going to turn over to you.
Yes, please. Go ahead, ma'am. They can hear you, please.
Yes, good evening. Interesting topic this evening. As a matter of fact, I lived with a situation. I had a child that had Prader-Willi syndrome, which is a deletion of a chromosome.
Yes.
So, my daughter has passed, and to be honest with you, it was a situation where I seemed like I was out to sea on my own, because there's not a lot known about Prader-Willi, because I remember when she was diagnosed, first to begin with, at birth, she was diagnosed as coming along as cerebral palsy. So I became the expert because I'm a healthcare professional. I made sure I knew everything. But as she grew, I realized that, no, this ain't looking right. And I remember taking her to her pediatrician, Dr. Albert Graham at the time. And I said to him, right, Dr. Graham, if my daughter has cerebral palsy, I have cerebral palsy. He said, "Will you meet?" I said, and I rattle off all the things, because what I would say to parents, when you have a child with a challenge, you need to become the expert. You need to know all that there is to know about your child. So at that time, another familiar name to both of you, Dr. Jennifer Campbell had just returned to Barbados as a developmental pediatrician. And Dr. Graham called her in. And he said to me, "Tell her what you just said." And I told her, and we laughed. And Dr. Campbell said, "I want to give you some literature. Go home and read it and call me back." That was the first time I had ever heard about Prader-Willi syndrome in my life. But when I was reading this literature, I was reading about my child. And I called her back. She said, "Well, you know, we don't do chromosome testing in Barbados." And she did the blood specimen, sent it off, and sure enough, that was the diagnosis. And that started a whole lifestyle change for me, because in Barbados, nobody ain't known about the Prader-Willi syndrome. I out there on my own. It was an experience, but a very positive one. And I am very actively involved with the disabled. I champion the cause, so to speak, especially for intellectual impairment. Because you know, one of the things with Prader-Willi is they're intellectually challenged. And then you spoke to obesity.
Yes.
One of the things with Prader-Willi is that the hypothalamus inside the brain that should say you are full, it does not work. So you have to manage the diet tightly to make sure that, yes, the obesity will come, but how far will you let it go? Because morbid obesity is a serious thing. And one of the things I've been calling for Barbados, we might not be able to afford a geneticist full-time, but I think we need to have someone come through Barbados every now and again to do genetic testing and counseling. I have a difficulty where you encounter a parent that is challenged. Then that parent with a male has a child. The first child is challenged. They have another child with the same person. That second child is challenged. So what are we going to do, sit down in Barbados and let it get 12 and 13 and 14 children, knowing that we need to do genetic testing and counseling? I mean, I'm happy that Down syndrome is highlighted, but there are so many other challenges, people living with children with what I call orphan illnesses that do not get the support they need because it's a one-off situation.
Yes. Yes. So, you want me to go ahead, Dr. Grandison?
Yes, yes, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I hear what the caller has said, and I definitely can feel that she went through a lot. And one very important thing that I would highlight, and which she said, which is very true, whenever you have a child with any kind of medical condition, whatever it is, if, especially if it's a major medical condition, but really any medical condition, you as the parent need to become an expert in that medical condition to ensure that you can advocate effectively for your child to get the best possible treatment. It's so important. And I applaud her for being persistent and saying that, you know, something is not right with my child. We as doctors and healthcare providers don't always know everything. But one thing I've learned as a pediatrician is that you always listen to the parents when they're telling you something, because they know this is when they, when a parent says to me, something is wrong with my child, something is not right, I always pay extra attention, because 9.9 times out of 10, that parent is completely correct. But I would like to mention that we do genetic testing in Barbados. Perhaps at the time, it may not have been commonplace, but it certainly is done now. It's a very expensive undertaking, but because it can mean, yes, but because it impacts the entire life course of the child, we need answers, not just for the child, but for the family, so we can anticipate the type of care that a child needs. And this is not just related to Down syndrome, but any genetic condition. And certainly we are familiar with Prader-Willi syndrome. There are other children in Barbados with Prader-Willi syndrome. So definitely you are not alone, although it is certainly quite uncommon.
I was talking
but thank
about
you for your comments.
1984, way back then. And
yes,
to be honest with you, I want to take this opportunity to say to Dr. Graham in his grave, Sir Cecil,
yes,
and Dr.
Yes.
Campbell, and I mean, like, even when my child had to be hospitalized, it was like, I always felt as though, this is like, for want of a better term, not in a negative light, it felt like mm-hmm. a three-ring circus, because like, all the mm-hmm. doctors would be coming, oh, great, and it was like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she, to me, she had a good life. She lived for 22 years.
God bless her. Yes.
And I learned a lot. Yes. As I said, I yes. work in healthcare, but then having that aspect of healthcare trust on my lap,
yes.
it was a learning curve, which I yes. will not trade for the world.
Yes. Yes. Children with syndromes may be different, but they're worth it. They're worth it. Yes.
Okay, caller.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you kindly. Thank you really kindly for your contribution. Time is getting very small on us, but before we run back over to Dr. Grandison, I can lump all three of these basically in one, because the good doctor, Dr. Birchwood, has been telling me all evening it's a genetic problem, whereby you have one yes. more chromosome, but this person is asking, if the mom drinks alcohol while pregnant, can that be the problem? But I think you said it's a genetic problem. So I think that answers that
Correct.
Question. The other two,
yes.
From two different people, basically asking, I guess the same thing. Good evening, doctors. Is it true that persons with Down syndrome are infertile? That's the first one. And the second one from a different person is asking, good evening, Grandison and Dr. Grandison and Dr. Birchwood. Could the doctors tell me if a girl with Down syndrome can become pregnant?
I think that those are very good questions. Actually, I was wondering if they were peeping at my question bank that I intended to ask Dr. Birchwood, because it is probably one of the struggles that most societies have with children, as especially developing females who have Down syndrome, where they can become pregnant. Dr. Birchwood, do you want to shed some light? Because they are certainly part of a protected population.
Yes.
Am I correct? Yes. So go ahead, Dr. Birchwood, and then I'll take the question on RNICU.
Okay, sure. So children with Down syndrome, when they grow up, their fertility is definitely different. So it's not common that they can get pregnant. But for the females, about up to one third of them, if I remember my stats correctly, up to one third of them can actually conceive. But when they do conceive, about half of those children that they have can have Down syndrome. So there's a really high risk. If you have a female with Down syndrome who's pregnant, there's a 1 in 2 or a 50-50 chance that she'll have a child with Down syndrome. Now, on the other hand, males with Down syndrome, there has never been any medical evidence that they're actually able to have children. So males are not fertile with Down syndrome, but females, in up to around one third of cases, they can actually have a child, but half of the children that they have would actually also have Down syndrome. Yes.
Okay, Dr. Bertrand, I just want you to very quickly explain what is that tier 3 facility that we have here in Barbados before Gregson comes with another caller. So just very quickly.
Yes. Well, you know, that is very close to my heart, Dr. Grandison. So we have a level 3 neonatal or newborn intensive care unit. And a level 3 unit means that you can handle sick and premature newborn babies. So there are four levels of newborn care. Level 1 is just regular newborn care. Level 2 is, you know, mildly premature babies or mildly sick babies. Level 3 is very sick babies. And level 4 is where you actually do something called ECMO or cardiac bypass on newborn babies. We do not do that in the Caribbean. It's something that you only do in large countries because you need to do it very often to do it well. And it's very rare in Barbados that we'd have a baby who would actually need ECMO. So level 3 means that we manage quite premature babies. We manage babies who are from 600 grams, which is about a pound and a little bit, and above. And we also manage babies who may be critically ill with heart problems, lung problems, surgical problems, and so on. And so we have babies who may spend quite a long time in our unit, especially if they were born very prematurely, may spend 4, 5, 6 months on the unit, depending on their degree of illness. So that is a unit that we have in Barbados. We get referrals from other countries in the region because we are one of the few countries in the Caribbean that does have a level 3 unit. And so we get high-risk mothers coming here to deliver because of the care that we are able to provide as a country on our unit.
And I can tell you, it's actually one of the most exciting units to work on because there's never a dull moment, never a dull moment in NICU. But it's one of the areas that really encourage you to hone your skills and really understand that pediatrics and neonatal population, they are not just small adults. They are their Absolutely. Own people themselves. Yes. Gregson, last question, I guess, before we wrap it up.
Yes, go right ahead, caller, please.
Yeah, I just want to tell Dr. Bertrand that once you're in the hands of Dr. Bertrand, you got to be good. That's from the poet. I admire you very much on the show with Pearson.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. You know a lot about me. Thank you very much for your support and your kind words. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, caller. Dr. Grandison.
Yes, I actually say that wasn't a question, but a very, very apt compliment. Dr. Bertrand, I just want to ask this very last question that just came in. Dr. Birchwood, are you satisfied that healthcare providers have sufficient information for dealing with children and adults with Down syndrome in Barbados?
I think that's a great question. And I think that as healthcare providers, we all have different skill sets and different areas of focus. I can say that all healthcare providers are equipped with information to help them to identify and manage children who have Down syndrome. But they will all at some point in their lives need some kind of specialist care. And this is where we as healthcare providers, as part of the medical team, will join hands with our colleagues and make sure that we partner together in a team, because these children need a team. They can't be managed by just one healthcare provider, one doctor, one nurse, one therapist. It's a team approach. And I think you would agree with that, Dr. Grandison.
Absolutely. It doesn't make any sense delaying a patient's care when you have an expert out there that can certainly expedite care and get that patient the best care that they can have. Dr. Birchwood, I want to say thank you so very much. I know you're usually very busy and you can get called away at any moment to present to the hospital. So I want to say thank you so much for taking the time out this evening to really shed in some light on this area that quite often isn't spoken about. And I think the theme for this year is so appropriate, with us but not for us. To really give persons with Down syndrome an equal opportunity to allow them to be able to excel as much as possible within their own right. And I just want to say thank you so much for taking this opportunity to educate the public. Thank you.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. There you go. Another riveting session of the Better Health Radio Show. And this evening, we had on deck Dr. Adanna Grandison. She was her presenter. And of course, I will ask her if it will be her next week or if it will be Dr. Lewis or Dr. Kale. And she will tell me, as usual, what, Dr. Grandison?
Well, wait and unfortunately, see. it's not me next it's week, you, but you okay. need to wait and see.
Right.
The topics are getting more and more interesting, Gregson.
Very well.
As we get closer to crop over, for those persons who are very interested in the season, we have something for you. So stay tuned. Don't decide that you're going to check out. Stay tuned. The sessions are getting more interesting. Good evening, Gregson, and to the wider Barbadian listener, I want to say have a wonderful weekend and continue to be safe out there.
Thank you. That's Dr. Adanna Grandison, your host for this evening's presentation of the Better Health Radio Show. And this evening, she had as her guest, Dr. Gillian Birchwood. A big thank you to her as well. We will see whoever it is that comes around next weekend. But until then, everybody have a wonderful evening.